You're listening to Simple Flight Aviation Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Heppner on www.simpleflight.net.
Simple Flight Radio, ready for takeoff.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult? Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Heppner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.
Well, that was quick.
Quick about what?
7 days just went by, just like that, lickety-split.
You know what? I was just going to say, like, the last 23 days have just gone by. What do you mean 7 days went by quick?
Like, monumentally fast? I don't know. Is it plaid?
Yeah, no, okay. Yeah, I guess it did go fast. Life is going fast.
It is.
Yeah, you say that as the 20-something.
Yeah, well, hey, the 20s is the roaring 20s, right?
Yeah, although my 20s weren't so roaring.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, so I had a terrific 30s. And the fabulous 40s. And the 50s have been pretty fantastic.
Fabulous.
Fabulous.
In the 60s, you look forward to movie discounts.
Actually, you know, I have a Sunday Night Chuckle at some point I should do on that. That one might be long for tonight. I don't know that I'll do that one. But
that
next week, maybe. I'll see if I can't do the abbreviated version.
Well, that'd be fabulous. Hopefully you'll bring that up at some point. But welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Al Waterloo here with Mark Heppner, broadcasting live from the KPWK Airport. Once again, it is Simple Flight Aviation Radio, my favorite time of the week.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it is. Are you kidding me?
Your favorite time is when you were out, like, washing airplanes today. You look like you were in the zone.
I was in the zone. People came up to me. They didn't hear, you know, I didn't hear them. I was just, you know, I was like Kevin Costner in that movie where he says, "Clear the mechanism."
I don't even remember that movie.
It was a baseball movie where he was the pitcher for the Detroit Tigers, and it was a love story. I forgot, what's the name of it? I don't know. If anybody knows the name of the movie, you tweet it.
Uh-oh,
I think it's For Love of the Game.
Yes, that's right.
The Field of Dreams.
Yeah, he's got a lot of baseball films out there, but that's one of them.
Yeah, actually, I lost my train of thought. Never mind.
Yeah.
I'm tired today.
Well, anyway.
So I was going to say you washed an airplane.
Yes, I was.
And you know what? The one thing that I saw there was... you guys, you and Travis, are usually in the airplane. You were on the airplane.
Yes.
We were wing walking in the hangar.
We were. That was kind of nice. We're amateur wing walkers today.
Actually, the only person in the airplane was your girlfriend, and she's not even a pilot.
Exactly. We had the whole ground crew on the plane today washing it, which was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I used to do that for a living.
Yeah,
you know,
good.
When I was in college.
That's awesome. Well, hey, before we get too far along, I want to invite everybody to follow us on Facebook and Twitter. If you just look up simpleflight.net, you'll find us on Facebook, and our Twitter handle is @simpleflightnet. That's a great way to talk to us during the show and tweet your questions in or post them on Facebook.
I'll do that.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the only way I can get you to listen to me.
Why?
I don't know why. If you respond to those, you know, I shouldn't say this. I'll keep it anonymous. There's a person I talk to, and when I meet with them,
yeah,
in a half an hour, I would say maybe 3 to 5 minutes, I'll actually talk to the person.
Yeah,
and then the other time they're like on their cell phone tweeting and emailing and texting. Why are we together?
Is that me?
No, it's not you.
Oh.
No, you give me a good 7 minutes.
So according to my watch, we've got, we're at a minute, 5:39 right now. So I guess.
So I guess in about a minute and 39 seconds, I'll see you next week.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, that's always kind of one pet peeve. Well, I wouldn't say it's a pet peeve. Everybody's starting to do that, and it's hard, and I'm a massive violator of the, like, social rule of engaging in conversation. Then you gotta, like, get on your phone and do the next thing, but
I don't know. Like you say, it's actually pretty common for, especially the under 30 group.
Yeah.
But it happens at all ages. And yeah. I'm even guilty of it sometimes too.
Yeah, that's alright. But that doesn't matter. And, we encourage cell phones during this show, that's for sure.
We do.
And, like I said, tweet your questions in at SimpleFlightNet. But do not carry that rule onto your favorite airline, flying your airliner to wherever, because you're going to get kicked off the plane.
That's right. Virtual or not.
Yeah. Yeah. So there was a, last time I was on, an airline, I was coming back from Las Vegas, and somebody during the safety briefing was going, and their cell phone, the same person's cell phone, went off 3 times in a row during the safety briefing. And right at the point where they said, no portable electronic devices are allowed. And then all of a sudden they made this big scene and were about ready to kick the people off, and they couldn't speak English, and it wasn't turning into be a good
El
situation.
El no cell phone
Yeah.
During flight-o.
Right.
Isn't
exactly
that how you translate it to other languages?
Right. Yeah, so no cell phone.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. So how was your week?
It was good. You know, it was very work-laden. Not flying
work-laden? Oh.
Yeah, so on Thursday that we had a board meeting, that brought me out to the airport. And then we had a great safety breakfast yesterday, but didn't fly. And yet today was good. I grabbed the Dakota for a couple hours, did some practice approaches. I consider myself an avionics expert and an autopilot expert, because I want to know that in a split second I can shift between one or the other and all that. And in our Dakota, I have less experience using the automation. And I would
say... Is it really? That's like very little automation.
Well, you know, to me, I want to be able to shoot. I always like to practice a localizer back course, ILS, and then a GPS/WAS. And I want to do it with vectors where I am given a heading, which then moves to, intercepting and establishing on the final approach course. And with our Dakota, I don't think you can do that. You have to shift from heading mode to nav mode, where so many of them, you can either give a pilot defined vector angle, or it's automatically 45 degrees, like on the STIC-55X or the DFC-90.
Right.
So today that was kind of a wake-up call. I wasn't as...
Your expertness was intruded upon.
I like the way you put that. Because expertness was first. I don't know. Never mind. I'm thinking.
How did you become an avionics expert?
I get into it. You know how the people get into different things? And we're going to have a guest today talk about how people get into... things like virtual airlines.
Yeah.
And I am that way with all automation in the cockpit. I want to know it better than everybody. It's a personal pride thing. And so every little twist of the dial and pull the dot button and all this, even how to get into the secret menus by doing like on the Avidyne, the L1, L3 button on the PFD, not many people know. If you push those two things down and turn on the system, it takes you into the administrator panel.
Wow.
And I'm just a sales guy. I'm not a geek.
Wow. You're selling it.
But
you're selling it right now.
Necessity is the mother of invention. I had to change the aircraft reference symbol on the Avidyne once, because it showed when you were in level flight, it showed like you were climbing or stuff. So I figured out how to change it. at the admin panel.
Nice.
Yeah. So I get into, I'm a problem solver. My wife would say I'm a problem creator, but.
That's nice. Well, that's, that's really getting into the inner bowels of avionics.
Did you just say bowels?
Yes, I did.
Hey, I have, normally I get my little tweet that says, I hear you loud and clear. I didn't get that, so.
So,
you getting, someone tweet in and say they can hear us loud and clear.
I've been getting
good,
good feedback.
Okay, then never mind.
So, we should just go under the premise, no news is good news.
We will.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that. I probably shouldn't have brought it up, but I was concerned.
Yeah,
you know, it happens to me once or twice, and then I'm on my edge for the rest of my years doing radio.
Yeah, well, exactly. You know, so, what happened? You went up today and,
beautiful day, by the way.
It was beautiful.
I saw the arch. And I'm not talking about McDonald's. I think I could see St. Louis from Chicago, and that's 300 mile visibility. And of course I'm kidding, but it was crystal clear.
Nice.
To the horizon.
That's awesome.
Oh, it was beautiful.
You gotta love this. I think fall is probably the best time of the year to fly.
Yeah, so, you know, today was, you know, didn't need a jacket. And so I'm not a lover of winter flying from the cold perspective. I love the smoothness, the performance of the airplane, and the visibility.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's really kind of nice. And, you know, historically speaking, here in the Midwest, it's like, you know, the last week of October, you know, first week of November, then it starts like really getting bad and, you know, you just got to start like getting out your ice caps, right? Just to refresh yourself on where icing is. And it's a real threat to general aviation aircraft. And, I don't know, I really like that analytical side of winter flying. Of really knowing, you know, analyzing the weather and knowing that you can make a good decision out of that, even if it's a bad day, you know, what is perceived to be a bad day of flying. And once you get up there, you're like, man, I made the right decision.
Yeah, that's cool. You know, and my biggest analytics decision there is whether to use a quarter or a nickel. I'm going. It's heads.
I wish everybody could have just seen that.
I just did a virtual coin flip.
Yeah. I'm going. That's awesome. That's the kind of stuff we should be promoting on the show. What's your favorite coin for deciding whether or not to fly?
A go, no go coin.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm going to do that one too. Another business. No, you know what's funny is as many years as I've been flying, even including the 25-year hiatus, I still, I call you, I call Renee, I call people to confirm when it's iffy weather. It's the confidence just isn't there. So those that fly more than me or that have flown with the airlines and things, I trust.
Yeah.
You know what my capabilities are. And so it's just,
right.
I just don't want to hurt anybody.
Well, I think that's a smart thing to do and have everybody get an opinion. And there's nothing wrong with that. You're just, you know, every time you do that, you learn more.
Yeah. Of course, there was that time, and I'm sure my friend Al's listening, and we had, Renee say, you guys should go flying. It was sunny when he said that. By the time we got out to the runway, we couldn't see 2 feet in front of us because of the blizzard.
That's
and
awesome.
We took off in it. And he was laughing on the ramp as we took off into this.
That sounds great.
Yeah, I think I'm going to trust him in the future.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I think that's nice. Hey, if there's any listeners out there that would like to help, Mark out with his, go-no-go decisions, let us know.
Yeah. After that, yeah. I need, my bounce back buddies, if you will.
The bounce back buddies, and that, yeah. You know, that they should comment through tweet. Send out a tweet.
You know, I've got a great idea,
cool.
But it's gonna stay off the air for now.
Why?
I gotta let this one
percolate. Is it a business?
It is.
Yeah, everything.
Everything's a business.
Everything's a business.
Hey, you're picking your nose.
The show
hey, that gives me an idea.
Is another business.
Yeah. The guy's picking his
for
nose.
Mark,
I'm going to give
then
it
on
business.
That, like, it's like on the minutes, it's a business, and then on the 30 seconds, it's like the acronyms.
Well, and acronyms and business go together.
Six Sigma?
No, just BGT.
I have no idea what that.
Business goes together. Never mind. That was a quick one.
I don't know how. I'm still mystified how that goes, but
I told you north up.
Yeah. Okay. There we
don't
go.
Don't go there.
Yeah. Nice. Nice. Crazy. So there was, I gotta say, I am really sore right now.
Sore upset or sore muscular?
Well, yeah, like muscular sore and like achy. I don't know. Today I'm like feeling that, you know, and feeling my age, which.
Yeah,
sounds,
listen to you.
Sounds,
don't even go there on me.
Yeah,
on that thing.
Sounds ridiculous to you. But climbing on airplanes, and so we watched two airplanes today, the King Air.
Which is like two airplanes in and of itself.
Yeah, which is essentially basically three airplanes, and washing them and waxing them and everything. Man, that's a lot of work.
It is, and especially if you take pride and want to do it right.
Right.
And, you know, as I said, I did that as a college student. I washed airplanes.
Right.
In exchange for time. Free time, but I loved it. I don't know, it was just me and the airplane. You know, I was a young kid then, and it wasn't about making money, it was about being with airplanes, and that was at the start of my passion for aviation.
Yeah.
Right, where I could now touch airplanes, I was taking lessons, and the ability to, Mark, go out in the hangar and watch those three warriors, and the Arrow, and the Seminole, or whatever we had back then, the Twin Comanche, I don't know. Those were just fun days.
Right. Absolutely. Oh, I think you're right about that, being one with an airplane. And but I think that's the thing of being like getting in the zone with the plane. And I did find my first thing I do not like about the King Air.
Oh, really? What?
Today.
What? It's got a lot of surface area that needs to be cleaned?
I don't mind the surface area. What I do mind is that the height, the elevation that the belly has above the ground, you know, like how tall the airplane sits above the ground.
Yep.
So there's no creeper, which is like the little thing you lay on and roll around underneath like a car mechanic. There's no creeper in the world that can like, you know, that can't sit up high enough so that you don't have to like lay on your back with your arm fully extended washing the belly of the plane, which that's a lot of work. That's like that's it. Yeah, turn that into a business. And we
well, what
are,
about like the creeper I have? You just raise the back.
I've got one of those where you have the back raising things, and it's just and we have a chair that like a creeper chair, which is too high, and you know, so you have to lay down on the backside creeper, and you know, it's basically you have to extend your entire arm all the way out.
Well, this is just my new business. We're going to invent a chair that you sit in. And it's going to have a buffer that goes on the top of a headset, and then it'll go, and you just slide down on the chair, and your head will be buffing the bottom of the plane.
There it is.
There it is.
We found it. The next Steve Jobs, aviation. That's nice.
Yeah. Or not.
Let's turn this into Aviation Shark Tank right now. So if anybody that would invest in Mark's business idea, tweet in.
Well, actually, I have a lot of other ideas.
And look at that.
The Fast and Furious.
Yeah, exactly. we got some people, but it's nice.
Cool.
So, good.
I have to ask you something. You know, we always do this point counterpoint.
Yeah.
And we may even bring our guest in on this one. I read an article about future safety needs of general aviation.
Right.
Or not even just general, just aviation. And there's a group of researchers indicating that they believe it's a problem that autopilots can just be disconnected. That there should be positive exchange of controls like we do in the airplane. You've got the controls, I've got the controls, you've got the controls the three times.
Right.
And they have a problem with someone at the very last second saying, okay, we're going to kill ourselves, and throwing my hands up and saying to a co-pilot, you've got the plane, right? You can't do that. And then they don't want the autopilot doing that either.
Right.
So, you know, I think that makes sense, but, what do you think? Do you understand what I'm saying?
That you have to accept control from the autopilot.
Affirmative.
Yeah, well, I think you already do that right now by disconnecting the autopilot. There's a tone. There is a, there is a lot of that.
Let me find it.
I don't know. I think that's kind of what I think about it, you know, just by, based on, you, you know, the autopilot right now, if you want to disengage it, you have to take control by hitting a button, turning it off, or doing whatever. You know, some are easier than others, but
right.
On any, like, let's say airliner right now, you know, it's pretty obvious that the autopilot is on or it's off. And when it's going from the on to off position, you're going to know about it.
Okay.
And sometimes you even have to acknowledge it, that it's like, when you hit the button once, you know, the autopilot turns off, but then there's an alarm. And then you actually have to silence the alarm.
Let me read the little bit, is at the risk of reading on the air, which always makes for horrible radio. And of course I pull up and it pulls up. Here we go. Safety researchers suggest autopilot redesign. Before control of an aircraft shifts from the autopilot to the pilot, the system should require the receiving pilot to acknowledge that he or she has assumed control, according to a recent study of ergonomics and flight safety. Eric Geiselman, lead author of the two-part study published in Ergonomics and Design, emphasized that the warning should occur before the autopilot is disengaged. Ah, that's the difference. You know, so we get the tones because it immediately disengages.
Right.
This is saying, no, before it does, it's going to do it. The warning should occur before the autopilot is disengaged, not after, as it is currently required. The sudden disengagement of an autopilot is analogous to a pilot suddenly throwing up his or her hands and blurting to the co-pilot, "Your plane!" And it focused on two high-profile 2009 crashes, Colgan Air in Buffalo and Air France off the coast of Brazil. They say the current autopilot design is flawed and creates unnecessary emergencies by surprising pilots during critical high-workload episodes. And it goes on for another paragraph. I think I'll not read it. But so I don't know. I was going to let's bring in our guest who hasn't been introduced yet, but John Kessinger is in the studio with us to talk to us a little bit about another subject. But I know you have a view of this, John. So why don't you kind of enlighten me?
Okay. So first of all, thanks for having me here.
All right.
We haven't officially introduced you.
Yeah. Right. Second of all, so this sounds a lot to me like, if you know on your computer when you're going to shut down Microsoft Word or any other program and it gives you that little pop-up box that says, "Are you sure?" And then you have to click OK to actually exit. So it sounds a lot to me like what they're suggesting is something like that for the autopilot.
Yeah, I agree. That's what they're suggesting.
So, there are two issues that I see with that. First of all, if you require that the pilot acknowledge that they have turned off the autopilot, you're wasting potentially critical time, because the theory is that if the pilot wants to turn off the autopilot, and it's an emergency situation, it's probably because the autopilot is doing something that the pilot doesn't want to happen.
Right.
You know, so would you rather have it where the pilot just can quick disconnect the autopilot and take immediate control of the airplane, or do you want him to have to fumble for the switch that says, "Yes, I really do want to turn off the autopilot," even mm-hmm. though I already said I do.
Right.
Second of all, let's remember what the term pilot in command means. Okay, just because the autopilot is moving the control surfaces for the pilot doesn't mean that the autopilot is in command of the airplane. The pilot should be always in command of the airplane. And the second that you start requiring that an autopilot have a "Are you sure?" button, starts to take command away from the pilot. Because it's saying we're putting the autopilot's ability to fly the plane above the pilot, and that just goes counterintuitive to why you would have the pilot there in the first place, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Good points.
I like that, because there's a, there is a distinct line there that somebody has to be in charge, and if you want to restrict that responsibility, you know, I don't think it's necessarily with an autopilot. I see where, you know, you have positive exchange of controls, but I don't know. Maybe I'm misspeaking here, but I think that you have, you know, a situation should fully, you know, in order for a situation to develop where an autopilot just like fully disconnects, you know, there's a serious, you know, what's the weakest link, if you will. You know, it's probably, you know, the pilot, you know, because
right,
they let it to get to that point. If you look at the Buffalo crash, you're in icing and, you know, you're just doing your thing. Or no, excuse me, you were in icing, but that wasn't the ultimate, you know, cause of the issue. But, you know, your speed just gets too low. The autopilot reaches its limits and boom, it's done. You know, there's so many opportunities leading up to that point. So, you know, to your point, John, yeah, I could see that we're, you know, the pilot in command has always got to be in command, but I don't even know where
you
I'm
know,
going.
Well, that's all right, but to your point, if there was a co-pilot and what they bring up, it's say your airplane, my airplane, your plane, or I guess I got that reversed, but even though you're pilot in command, there is the positive release. So the missing piece of information here is what do you have to do to tell it that? If it's just a double push on a button, that, you know, I could do. If it's reach over behind the back seat and, you know, pull a little trigger. Because a lot of times, if I want to overpower an autopilot, I can overpower an autopilot without hitting any button. Right? And so, if it were that much of an emergency, I don't know. You know, somehow some people that consider themselves experts, excuse me if I made a little noise with the mic, are saying there's a problem here. And so I've got to believe that some study would suggest it. But on the surface, I understand your point, John. And I feel like if I'm pushing the button, there's a reason why I'm pushing the button.
Well, and to both of your points, though, is that, first, to Al's point, yeah, you're never going to be, or I should say, rarely are you going to be in an emergency situation that wasn't caused by a string of bad decisions. It wasn't one event caused everything.
Yeah.
So, and typically it's because, like you said, the weakest link in the cockpit typically is the human that's sitting at the controls.
Yeah.
So, to say that, do you really want to hand the control over to the pilot that was probably making the bad decisions and things like that? I don't know, but on the other hand, I still say, I don't, for instance, where it was saying that the warning tone should go off before the autopilot disengages. What's not clear there is whether it means the warning tone goes off and then the autopilot disengages anyways, or if it's the warning goes off and then you have to take another step to disengage.
Right.
And so that gets me a little bit concerned because, again, where time matters, even if the weakest link is the human at the controls, I still wonder about forcing him to be in a further high-stress situation by now he's tried to disconnect the autopilot, and it's not disconnecting.
Right. I think the thing here is it's unclear how do you signal that, yes, I have control of this airplane. Is it a sequence of events, or is it a double push? It doesn't say, and I'm reading it over.
It's a high five.
It's a, you have to give an acronym of five letters.
Yeah,
exactly. But it says, based on their research, that they can make it safer, and they said it's not just about pilot training. It's the automation is available today to enact, in this case, the positive change of controls, whether it's with the co-pilot or an automated co-pilot we call an autopilot.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's an interesting one.
That is very interesting. It'd be a very, cool human factors debate, later
HFD.
On.
HFD.
There you go. Exactly. And if any listener, we'd love to hear, if anybody listening has an opinion on this, tweet your thoughts in at SimpleFlightNet, or, you can post something on our Facebook wall, or even send us an email.
Yay.
At SimpleFlight, at gmail.com, which would be excellent.
You know, talking about like one pilot and all that, there's another thing I saw in the news. See that pilot of the airliner had a heart attack?
Yeah.
That had to be freaky.
That is a little freaky.
And, you know, obviously the non-flying public, they freak, oh my God, there's only one person in there, and obviously we know with a co-pilot and all that, they could fly on their own. There was another deadheading first officer that could help with the radios, but I'm freaking out now thinking they pull the captain and lay him on the floor in first class administering CPR. That would just be freaky.
That's
forget
a little
about
weird.
The airplane. Yeah.
Yeah.
Unfortunately and sadly, he didn't make it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I was thinking about all the, what had to be going through people's minds. It had to be a tense situation, to say the least.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I hope everything turned out just, the best that it could. But speaking about all these airlines, John with us today. He has a, something really cool that is dealt with airlines, but in a little bit of a twist.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah, absolutely. So, John, formally now, we will welcome you to the show tonight for the real reason why you're here, and that's to talk about Dash Air Virtual. So, welcome.
Well, thanks.
Yeah, thanks.
So, what, you know, I had the question, and now I feel so much more enlightened, but let's start there, because people are saying, what do you mean virtual, Dash Air, and all that? What are you involved with? And give them a little background, and then the tweets will come, what? Tell us more.
Okay, so you understand the concept of real-world airlines. So,
yes.
You know, moving planes and people from one side of the country to the other, or one side of the state to another, you know, this, that, or the other thing. And then people have a flight simulation as a hobby, so they'll go out and buy Microsoft Flight Simulator, X-Plane, one of those things.
Right.
And so they'll sit at home for, you know, however long, and they'll take off their virtual 172 and they'll fly to another airport, or they'll go around in the pattern, or they'll do things that you just absolutely can't do in a real world airplane. Well, some folks, what they'll do with their flight simulator is they'll load up a 737 or some other type of airliner class transport category airplane, and they'll fly to say from O'Hare to Orlando, and they'll have fun, you know, flipping switches with the autopilot and making sure it's doing whatever it's doing or supposed to be doing, as good pilots always should.
Yeah.
And
2.5 hours
later they land in Orlando, and then they say, well, okay, now I get to see what it was like to fly an airplane to Orlando, but it was 2.5 hours, and all I have to show for it is maybe a electronic log file that says, you know, congratulations, you took off from O'Hare, you spent 2.5 hours in the air, and you landed at Orlando. Virtual airlines kind of give a purpose behind that. So
that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I like that. You know, it's like it essentially creates a mission.
Right. And that's, I think, probably the best way to describe it is, when you go up in a real airplane, most times you're not just going up there just for the fact of flying. You're trying to accomplish something. You're practicing approaches like you were doing today.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you're trying to, you know, you want to go from point A to point B.
Yeah.
You know, things like that. With a virtual airline, it gives you a mission. So you have a route that somebody assigns you to fly. You fly the route, and then depending on what system you're using, you get some sort of reward for doing that. Either you get a virtual paycheck or something like that.
That's pretty cool.
what do I buy with a virtual paycheck?
Virtual houses, virtual furniture, virtual stuff, I don't know. Or you just say, well, you know, that's a reward in and of itself that, you know, somebody recognized that I actually did this, and I did it, what would in the real world be considered safely, and this, that, and the other thing.
That's interesting. I mean, I don't know that I could, I can't see myself, even though when I was much younger, I would play with The Sims. I can't see myself saying, okay, I'm going to fly for 2.5 hours. I would take off from an airport and then turn around and land, because to me it's all about taking off and landing. Or if I was going to cover great distance, grab my mouse, point at the airplane, drag it over so it's like 2.5 minutes rather than 2.5 hours. But obviously there's a lot of people that get into it, because I see all these setups like on YouTube where they put these multi-screen, like their own Redbirds in their living room type thing.
Yeah, I think that brings up a good point of what, you know, the at-home sim enthusiast entails. Is either, you know, like a guy that just has, you know, X-Plane or Microsoft Flight Simulator installed on their just PC in their office, or there's somebody that takes like a dedicated room and builds like, you know, their own mm-hmm. Dreamliner per se for, you know, their flight sim, you know, habits. And I think that if you were to go, you know, so, well, like, what segment of the population of the at-home sim people, John, do you think we're, like, referring to?
You know what? To be honest with you, I'm not sure. I've heard statistics of tens of thousands.
Wow.
Although I don't know how many people are doing, flight sim to begin, or, yeah, flight simulator to begin with, but, I do know that on the particular system that we work off of, there's some, 835 other virtual airlines just besides ours.
Holy cow, talk about deregulation.
Right, right. I know that the one that's got the number one spot in the system has some 400 pilots flying for it. It's FedEx cargo, virtual cargo.
Wow.
So they're doing pretty well for themselves. But we're moving up. We're getting there too, so.
That's pretty cool. So, like you said that, you know, that they're doing very well for themselves. What does that mean? Is that just based on the number of users?
Well, it's, so different virtual airlines, run things differently. Some of them are their own little world.
Right.
Where, they design their own ACARS software. So it'll actually pull data from the sim, and then generate kind of the same things that you would see in an ACARS flight report. Others of them, like what we have, is the ACARS is designed for you. You subscribe to this financial system that then has you compete with other virtual airlines. And you're competing for passengers from a particular airport.
Nice.
You're competing in terms of how much revenue you'll get on a particular route. You're also, you know, you're ranked compared to other virtual airlines.
Yeah.
In that system.
That's pretty cool. So it's like kind of like SimCity sort of for airlines.
That's what it sounds like to me. I don't know, SimCity, SimCloud, or
yeah, flight simulator, or let's not for airlines, but for flight simulator. And it's actually, you know, you take like, so you're trying to like work towards the greater good of, you know, something that's virtual.
Exactly. So we're, you know, it's all kind of fun competition, but, you know, we keep track of the rankings and we're saying, oh, well, now we're in the top 20%. We got to work a little bit harder. Maybe we can make the top, you know.
So I guess it's really no different than like kids that play Halo and all that. And they go out and they do shoot 'em up all night virtually with other people and they track their rankings.
They're just trying to win the war.
That's
all.
Right. Save mankind.
Yeah,
except, or destroy it, whatever.
Except our war is a little bit more boring if you consider that it's all about business management and P&L statements and, you know, how many passengers did you move last month and that sort, how many flight hours did you get in, that sort of thing.
See, I'm very fascinated by this because I think that, like, the you know, if you look for a lot of similarities in the real world versus, you know, this virtual world, I mean, as far as this business and the competition and trying to put others out of business, you know, that it's interesting because it, you know, that really exists and you can probably replicate that fairly well. And, you know, for, let's say, the actual user participating in this, it would be it's like a flying club for simulators, you know, where you have, you know, in our own flying club, here at the Chicago Executive Airport, the Leading Edge Flying Club, you know, we routinely, almost on a monthly basis, schedule flyouts. You know, so there's this whole social, it gives, you know, people are just looking for a reason to fly, mm-hmm. and now this gives, you know, people a reason to simulate, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and that's part of the reason why I got into the virtual airline aspect of flight simulation, because I wanted it to be more than just me. Kind of the same reason I'm doing my other website blog and all that sort of stuff, is because aviation is just too cool to keep to myself. And I want to experience that passion with other individuals. And so in the flight simulator world, you really can't beat being a part of a virtual airline.
Right.
Now, you know, we talked and have talked here with, like, oh, I can't remember the gentleman's name from Pilot Edge.
Yeah. Yeah. Keith.
Keith, thank you. You know, which is the live air traffic controllers for those using flight sims. Do people in the virtual airlines make the realism that much more, make effective, or I shouldn't say effective, make use of Pilot Edge?
Oh, absolutely. There's actually multiple ATC servers out there. So there's Pilot Edge, which is one of them. There's a service called VATSIM,
right,
which is a mm-hmm. virtual air traffic simulation. That'll give you global ATC coverage depending on what time you sign up and or sign in and get going. There's a few that offer private servers. So there's Boston Virtual ATC.
Yeah, I've heard of them.
They'll do their own ATC training. They do events and things like that. But we encourage our pilots as much as possible to get on to one of these virtual ATC services so that they can understand what it's like to not only fly the airplane for, you know, an hour or 2 hours, something like that, but, you know, they're coming into Los Angeles Class Bravo. You know, you're not going to just fly in there on your own. You're going to be vectored in, or you're going to have to receive.
So are these other ones also with live human beings? Are they more automated technology-based solutions, the VAT, ATC, or whichever you call it?
No, they are all live controllers. So it's somebody.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I assumed Keith was the only one doing it.
No, his is a derivative of this to try to make it a more of a you know, covering all ranges of simulator users and things like that, you know, and putting a business behind it. You know, he's got other things he's working on,
sure,
too, but that's a that's cool.
It's very interesting to me. You know, it's not, I shouldn't say exposing, but, yeah, it is exposing the whole additional side to aviation that I didn't even know about or I didn't consider it to be this widespread.
Yeah, I mean, I first heard of these virtual airlines when I was in college, and you know, I was very curious. I still am, you know, very curious about these, and I think that, you know, once you are, let's say, you get to the end of Flight Simulator or X-Plane, which seems hard to do, but you know, there's only so much flying around in an extra that you can do, and tumbles and, you know, little touch and goes and buzz towers and flying out of buildings.
I agree.
But then, like, you want to keep going, but, you know, you don't know what to do. You know, you could do your own flights, but, you know, once you get to that point, you know, I think the virtual airline is a great solution where you could essentially go on forever, right? And do whatever you want. But, you know, when I first signed up for this, the hurdle that I ran into is that, you know, back in college, you know, the user interfaces and, you know, how to install these things were pretty complicated, or how to get the virtual airline to actually work on your machine were pretty complicated. And I kind of just signed up and then I was like, okay, now what? You know, what's next? And I could never really figure that out. So I never really had a virtual airline career, you know, if you will.
See, and I've, having flown for other virtual airlines and now running my own, I've seen that issue a lot.
pilots will sign up for a virtual airline. So I won't name names, but they'll sign up for the virtual airline. Virtual airline will send its welcome email saying, you know, you need to download this, this, and this. You got to fly at least one route or two or three, however many routes they require a month. And best of luck to you. Go here to register. And, oh, by the way, you have 7 days or 3 days to fly your first route or you're out of here.
That sounds like the real airlines.
Yeah, really.
It does.
So what we try to do at Dash Air is we try to make it a little bit more personable, a little bit more social. Mm-hmm. What we'll do is if you sign up with us, we'll sit down with you. We'll ask for half an hour, hour of your time. We'll walk you through the starting your first flight, making sure that you understand the difference between flying a real-world airplane if you're a real pilot versus flying virtually for a virtual airline. Believe it or not, there are actual differences that you have to take into account. And then and then we'll get you going on your first flight. Now, we do have a requirement that you fly within a certain amount of days of signing up, but that's more along the lines of if you're going to sign up for something, why not participate? I mean, that's kind of like saying I'm going to go play baseball with the baseball team, but don't hand me a bat and don't hand me a glove. I'll just sit on the pine, ride the pine and watch.
Right.
And, you know, that's not really, you know, it's not supposed to be a spectator sport, basically.
Right.
How many people last? Is it high turnover? Or?
You know what? Surprisingly, when people sign up for a virtual airline that I've seen, most of them will stick around because they're doing it because they want to.
Mm-hmm.
After all, you're not making real money, so there's no financial motivation. You're not getting any kind of accolades or real awards or anything like that. So you're not, I mean, you might get some kind of virtual recognition through the virtual airline, but you're not going to get anything that you can put up on a wall and say, look, I did that. So most of the people that come on to a virtual airline are doing it because they want to.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, you don't see a lot of high turnover. You will see some folks that they sign up and then for whatever reason they can't figure out how to get the system to work, or they just they don't take it, even though it's a game, they don't take it seriously enough to understand that, hey, like I said, you got to fly within a certain number of days or, you know, at least have a conversation about it. So you do have some of those folks, but I would say that's the rare exception to the rule.
That's, I'm thinking here, right or wrong, about radio controlled flying. That's something that I always thought I'd want to do. And I've been to not only YouTube to watch, but I go to some of these fields and watch, and I've decided it won't scratch my itch. Personally, I'm not saying for other people, obviously, but it seems to me that I want to fly an airplane, and even being in the 777 sim, which was a blast, it wasn't a real airplane. I still do it. So it's interesting to me, and Al, I'd be interested in your perspective. As much as I think RC flying is so cool, especially if you got a turbine jet, ultimately I'm still on the ground and I'm simming that I'm up there.
Right.
And it's just, I think at some point you say, okay, it's fun, but it's not something I want to do long term. What about you? Could you give up, let's say, what you're doing? I don't know whether that's important or not, but could you do this and say it satisfies your aviation itch?
I think it could.
Okay.
Because we had, well, first of all, ever since I remember as a little kid, we had a flight simulator installed on a computer, you know,
right,
back in the 80s, you know, in the late 80s. And, you know, I was like 3 or 4, and some of my first memories were on flight simulators. So, you know, I certainly have a bond and attachment with that kind of stuff. And, but if I look at it from the perspective of where I'm at now, you know, I do a lot of flying, but I don't get to choose any of the destinations. You've heard me reiterate that point,
mm-hmm,
all the time. But, you know, this is a flight simulator is kind of like an escape where you can go into this virtual environment. You're in control. You could burn whatever gas you want. You know, you know, and do whatever you want to. You could fly into Class Bravo. You could go, you know, fly into prohibited area, all that. So I could definitely see that because, you know, even though I do fly a lot and I fly for a living, you know, one, I don't make a lot of money where I can just go out and rent the airplane all the time. And even just for touch and goes, you know, it's just not a, I'm not at that point yet where I can just go up and do that. So I still have that very big flying bug. So, you know, what's the next cheapest thing? Simulators. Mm-hmm. Why not?
Well, and I'll take kind of a hybrid answer to both of yours. So it's kind of funny you bring that topic up, Mark, because the other day my wife posed a question to me. She knows I'm very big into flight sim, obviously, because I'm sitting there doing this stuff.
Yeah.
But she also knows that I'm out there working towards my private pilot's license. And she actually said to me, if you had health issues aside, if you had to give up one or the other, which would you give up? Even as a virtual airline CEO, I'd still say I'd give up the flight sim because there's nothing like flying in a real airplane.
Right.
Now, having said that, I take Mark's approach, or I'm sorry, Al's approach also, that I am not Warren Buffett by any means. The virtual airline CEO is a virtual title through and through, so I don't make any sorts of big bucks whatsoever. And I just can't afford to rent an airplane whenever I want, however, whichever kind I want, and just do it for touch and goes or even to, you know, go from point A to point B. So Flight Sim gives me that bridge where I can still fly and get some more flexibility than I can otherwise afford in the real world. But it's not a substitute for the real world.
Mm-hmm.
I would gladly fly a real airplane any day of the week over doing Flight Sim.
Yeah.
It's a supplement.
Yeah.
That's
It could be a starter. It could be, you know, a lot of people, you know, that, you know, little kids start flying on flight simulators and, you know, maybe it's the bridge between, I guess that is a supplement, but it's the bridge between, you know, their youth to being able to get their license.
Mm-hmm.
Well, something like that.
Yeah. And, you know, that's kind of where I'm coming from on it is that, for the folks that, physically or medically, have medical reasons they can't fly a real airplane.
Right.
You know, their hands and arms and, you know, everything else still works, but there's some condition that they have that, you know, they can't get their third class
right.
medical or something like that. Flight Sim is a substitute in their mind. And in fact, the way things are, getting, a pretty darn good one. For other folks who do Flight Sim, it's a hobby. For kids, it's, you know, they're too young to get their pilot's license. So it's a way to get into aviation at a reasonable cost and, keeps their interest going.
Yeah. Oh, I think that's really that you hit the nail on the head with all that. And it's certainly a nice reality. You know, that you could turn into, you know, if virtual simulation is your reality,
right.
that's what it is, you know,
mm-hmm.
which is cool. I think you could get into it. And, you know, especially if we were to have a route or something like that, if you did it as community, you know, I think that you're a very social person and you could do all the avionics. These simulators are just so, you know, the environment is, especially with like a pilot edge or something like that attached to it and hearing your friends and everything. It's just like flying. It's kind of, it's a lot different than what it used to be.
I haven't done this and I know my experience on a sim has always been airport operations. Matter of fact, I would get these shoot 'em up simulators and I don't want to play the game. All I want to do is make a nice greaser landing.
Yeah.
And that was my enjoyment. Set up for an approach and fly it and
stick
it on and all that. And that, even whether it's on Xbox or on a PC.
Right. Absolutely.
I enjoy that.
And you know, that's kind of what I enjoy about the flight simulation is that as a person going for his real or a private pilot's license, I've also acted as a controller online. So
nice.
You know, it's kind of interesting to where if you do it as realistically as possible, you can, when you get into a real airplane, you can kind of see where the controller is coming from is in terms of why did he send me down that taxiway or why did she give me that heading?
Right.
And it's all because, you know, if you think about it, it's because the controller can see something that you can't. They see an impending collision, or they see that to get you lined up on the ILS, they have to have you turn, you know, so many degrees to the left or right. So to get onto flight simulation, you use things like Pilot Edge or one of those other ATC things, and then also to do the virtual airline things, you almost get to appreciate flying more, real-world flying more.
You know, you're talking about the ATC. That's something I would enjoy doing on a sim. You know, I'd love to work for Pilot Edge.
Yeah.
You know, if I had the time, just to improve that, those skills and that thing that I think I've always wanted to do, which was to be an air traffic controller.
There you go.
So it's like I say, each person has their own itch, and what's going to scratch it may be different things. It's interesting.
Absolutely. So what is it like to be a virtual airline CEO?
Boy, is there a heck, aren't they?
Well, as a lawyer myself, I often get in my own way because I start thinking about, well, for instance, picking the name Dash Air Virtual. Part of that was because, we've heard of stories of where somebody tried to start a, virtual airline named after a real world airline, and they got popular enough, or one thing led to another, and the real world airline got wind of it and almost had to shut down the virtual airline because they were using the wrong kind of trademarks, or they were using things that they weren't supposed to be doing, in terms of the virtual airline. Now, it turns out that I looked online and found out that there is actually a, without knowing it, there is a Dash Air charter service out of Texas.
Nice.
But if you go to my website or go to our website, down at the bottom it says, you know, the things you would expect it to see, like we're not at all affiliated with them. Anybody that's using those things or using the name Dash Air in the real world obviously takes precedence. We're not, you know, any similarity is purely coincidental, whatever you see in the movies kind of thing.
Right.
So
I'm on your website right now, which is dashairvirtual.com, and I'm just kind of browsing through. Looks like there's somebody actually flying right now from O'Hare to Atlanta in a 737-800, and they've got 45 minutes of flight left.
Yeah, that would be our chief operations officer, Jake.
Nice.
He said he was going to be doing a route tonight, so I guess he's keeping his word there.
Nice.
So it wasn't scheduled?
No, we kind of talked about it in advance, but I said, you know what, you do whatever you want to do. He knew I was going to be doing the radio show, but he had just sent me a text message saying, well, I happen to be in the air anyway, so.
Nice.
I just wonder, you know, if you have schedules, or do certain airlines fly a schedule and they can get bad customer ratings because they push back late or anything? Does it take it to that level?
Actually, it can. Our system
really
has it where certain routes are only available certain days of the week. You can insert a departure time and arrival time. So if you depart outside of a certain window, you're penalized. If you arrive too early, you can actually be penalized for that because, as you may know, in real-world airlines, the gate has to be clear for your plane to park there, and if you get there too early, you're sitting on the tarmac burning gas while you're waiting for the other plane to get out of the way. So there are those things to consider. You can get into that level. We don't. We basically say the routes are available all the time, every day, just so that if somebody wants to fly the route, they can fly it.
Yeah, no, that's pretty cool. There was a talking a little bit more about like the customer and the business side of things. You know, you said that you have a you earn money or you earn more routes or something like that, and you operate as a business. How does that work from like the business the virtual business perspective of an airline?
Okay, so with virtual airlines, because it's all computer based, it's all algorithms and math in the background and things like that. So as I understand it, and I could be way off base here, but what I understand is that in our system, each airport has a certain number of passengers, and where you rank in the system determines how many passengers you get, what you can charge for a ticket price, those sorts of things. Of course, what goes into that as well is customer experience. So if you fly your plane like a, the worst pilot ever, and you're, pulling lots of G's and you're doing loops in the 737 and things like that, you're probably not going to get a lot of customers that want to fly your plane again. On the other hand, if you're making smooth landings, your flights go off without a hitch. If you are using the scheduling aspect,
yeah,
and your flights are on time, you're probably going to get more passengers and or more revenue out of a flight.
That's pretty cool. You know,
it's like the real thing.
Yeah, it really is. So when you get like, you get this cash in the bank and or this virtual cash in the bank or something like that, what can you do with it? As the company itself.
Virtual sex.
Yeah. I guess you could buy anything.
Yeah, I suppose so, although I will say that I haven't ventured into that arena with
at least publicly speaking.
Yeah, well, but as far as what the airline can do, we do have financials to consider. So we have monthly leases on our aircraft that we have to cover. We choose our routes based on how much revenue we can generate.
Nice.
You can't.
So how do you get passengers? I mean, they aren't virtual passengers, are they?
No. So what it tells you is that you go to start a flight with the software, and it'll tell you how many passengers you're going to load onto your airplane.
Yeah.
And from there, you go into the Flight Sim's weight and balance calculator simulation, sub-simulation, and you put in the number of passengers or the amount of cargo weight or, both. And then from there, what it does is the software basically tracks that you are moving X number of passengers from point A to point B.
Interesting. Very interesting.
That's cool. Like all these like little calculators and monitors and things like that. It's like a real checks and balance system in here to make sure that, that this is, it's not like doing what Mark said that he would probably do is, hit pause, drag the plane with the mouse all the way to the end and all that. But, what about other guys that fly like, Chicago to Hong Kong or something like that?
Yeah, and in fact, for another virtual airline that I was involved with, we had a pilot that said, that's all I ever want to do. I want to do the long hauls. They set him up with a 747-400 and said, okay, O'Hare to Heathrow, go. O'Hare to, Portugal or O'Hare, name random place in the world, go fly it. And he would get in the 747, load it up, and you could watch the airplane for 10, 12 hours crossing the other side of the world.
I think that's when I get off.
Yeah.
So to say, in a negative way.
Yeah.
God.
Get your mind out of the gutter.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. No. I'm hoping that he wasn't sitting at his computer that whole time. I cross my fingers.
You and me both. But anyway, I digress.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what's interesting is all this virtual airline community is, you know, it's just like this kind of like, you know, a lot of people don't know that or they don't realize that it exists, right?
I agree. A lot of us don't.
And, I used to work when I was at the airlines. I used to work with a flight attendant at the same hub that I was based at, and I flew with him a couple times. But he was really big into virtual airlines, and he would always ask for whenever you flew with him, he would always ask for the flight plans that you would take if fly for the day, and you know he wanted you to save them because he was going to go and actually fly them on the virtual airline with the flight simulator. And he would bring a laptop and a joystick and rudder pedals and stuff like that. And he was actually trying to add a little airline SOP to this, that if you went and talked to him and you were at 8,000 feet, he would not talk back to you because he was below 10,000 feet in its sterile cockpit. Which was like, I'm like, okay, I don't know if that was going a little too far, getting into it a little too much, but it was pretty hilarious.
Yeah, I can't say that I personally take it to that level. I will say that if I'm on final approach and I'm past the final approach fix, I'll ask my wife to hang on to her question for about 30 seconds.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to enforce sterile cockpit in my house. I have I have two labs that love to bark at whatever's walking down the street at that particular moment. So
you're a pet airline.
Yeah, I can't. We can't enforce sterile cockpit for us. But but to your point, people do. Well, you can take it to that level of realism, and in fact, with I think Jacob Eiding with his product FSX Flight. That'll actually create a virtual ADS-B connection between Flight Simulator and 4Flight. You can actually download, you know, how 4Flight will suggest routes sometimes. You can actually use it to say, okay, I'm going from O'Hare to Orlando. Suggest to me a route that will get me there.
Yeah.
And so it'll give you a list of routes that were actually filed.
Yeah.
It'll give you a list of routes that it says, based on the weather and all this other stuff, this is what you probably ought to do.
Right.
Things like that. And then, you can load up your own route, and then through FSX Flight, you can, and then 4Flight, you can track your route progress all the way through. So, you can bring in some of that real world aspect of routes and, planning and things of that nature.
Right. I think it's really cool. Mark, what would be the route that you would want to fly the most?
Pewaukee Cedar Rapids. No, you know, I say that only because that's what I fly a lot. Again, you know, to me, I truly, unless I'm visiting family, I just want to fly and I want to do airplane things. And so it's not about where do I start from and where do I finish. Because I don't care.
So
that's not the answer you were looking at it for. I can tell by the way you're looking at me, like, what?
What?
What the hell?
You know. Okay, so you know, you've always, and deep down inside, the little boy in you just wanted to be a airline pilot. You would love to have been an airline pilot.
Yeah,
I'm sure that you had a dream at some point of being like flying, like the flagship airliner from point A to point B. What was point A, point B?
See, that, again, you just shows how you don't know me. But this is truly what I would do is pick a flight, and this is outside of me wanting to see certain places. I'd love to fly into Rapid City. I'd love to fly to see Devil's Tower in Wyoming, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But in terms of a point A to point B, I would want them to be closer. I would actually probably prefer a regional. Because I love takeoffs and landings.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of neat in between, but whether it's at 30 minutes or 2 hours between the takeoff and landing, it doesn't matter to me. I don't want to get too long. Be like, they're all the same. It's that middle portion where you look out and enjoy the view.
Well, and it's funny you mention that because, particularly with Dash Air, we've tried to keep all of our routes relatively short. I'm not sure what the exact percentage is, but most of them are within right around an hour time frame.
Yeah,
we actually do run a 208 caravan from O'Hare to Janesville or O'Hare to Dubuque. So we'll do those.
Yeah, I could do that one, Al. Put me on the.
Yeah. Well, then there you go.
You know, Air Choice One, our guest with the airline that does all those little stops between here and St. Louis.
Yeah.
I actually, from a passenger point of view, and I shouldn't say this, but it's kind of frustrating how long it takes to get to St. Louis. But as a pilot, I would enjoy working for them. Fly from here to over the border to Iowa and
it'd be a riot.
Because you're actively, you're not in cruise, you're climbing, you're short, straight, and level. Now you're descending, you're shooting approach, you're touching down, you're greeting passengers. That's my element, my environment.
Right. So, and that's kind of where we came from when we were setting up our routes is that we know there are guys that are out there that want to do the long hauls.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not one of them. I'll fly our 767. I'll turn on the autopilot and let it do its thing for 2 or 3 hours while I go do whatever it is that I want to do, and then I'll come back and land it because I don't want to sit there.
Don't oversleep. That happened to Northwest a few years ago.
Oh, yeah. No. But I also like doing the shorter routes. Like one of the routes I did today was Saab 340 from O'Hare up to central Wisconsin. It was about 30 minutes. So I'll do those kind of routes because they're quick. They're easy, and it's...
I'll take the O'Hare to Midway route.
Well, that's the only unfortunate part of our system is that we have a minimum distance that we have to travel.
Sure.
So I think it's something like 30 nautical miles between departure and arrival airports.
All right.
So
that's pretty cool. I don't know. I could tell, Mark, you're not really digging the virtual airline thing.
Again, I always like Sims, but for only a certain aspect of it, and that was my active involvement. Cruise is not active involvement. In a real airplane, even like if I'm going to Kansas City, I wish it wasn't 2 hours to Kansas City. I mean, I appreciate it's not 10 hours in the car. But while I'm up there, I just look out. Well, I love the views of seeing from an airplane what this world looks like from 8,000 feet.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the, you know, on that point, Mark, you know, I do the virtual airline thing, but when I'm also doing flight sim, I don't do the virtual airline all the time. It's not the only flying I'll do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll fly to, I've got a little Cirrus SR-22 on there. I'll fly to Oshkosh, something I'll hand fly the whole way. I'll fly across the lake to Benton Harbor,
mm-hmm.
those kind of places.
Yeah.
You know, so... So I get my virtual experience of what I like to do in a real airplane. But then for the virtual airline, that's more of the business aspect and the purpose behind why would I get in an airplane and fly somewhere for 2 hours.
Right. Al, what would your flight be?
I always thought it would be cool. I was like the transcontinental,
right.
Flights.
And as a virtual, you'd do that too?
Yeah.
See, I respect that. And like I say, I just think it's a little bit different than I would go for. But you and I have talked and you've always thought it'd be neat to be flying a BBJ to, Paris or wherever you'd like to go.
Absolutely.
We have a 767 with your name painted just under the
cabin
window.
Wow.
So,
Waterloo!
Well, that's a good thing. So how do you sign up?
You can go onto our website, dashairvirtual.com. I believe you already mentioned that. If you look on the team page, there's a link to join.
Uh-huh.
Click on that, and there's a little form you fill out. Shoots an email over to me. As soon as I get the email and as soon as I can attend to it, which is usually within 24 hours, I'll go into the system. I'll add you as a pilot to our
to our airline, and then I'll shoot out the obligatory welcome email and then asking you, hey, we have a TeamSpeak server. I'd like you to spend half an hour with me so we can go over what's going on with the airline, how you get started, and things like that. And then we could just get you flying.
Yeah. That's yeah, it's part of me sounds really cool, or part of me, you know, is it's really attracted to that, you know, this thought, you know, partly because here's the thing, it's like I love simulating and it's just fun going on there, you know, like Jacob Eiting, you know, he's a good friend of the radio show, and he gets on and he'll, you know, broadcast his sim sessions, just, you know, and people watch or something like that. And, you know, this would drive me to go find and upgrade my, you know, at-home simulator, which is basically a laptop right now, which you really can't get much, you know, you can get a lot of enjoyment out of it, but, you know, these things, flight simulators are pretty big programs that need a lot of hardware going.
You know what? I'll respectfully disagree with you there.
All right. Excellent.
Don't even respectfully disagree.
You know, okay, well, I'll disrespectfully disagree with you there. I don't know how you do that, but I certainly won't do that here, so.
Turn down that mic, cut him off.
Right, I see the sim that you have set up over here, where it's just the yoke and the throttles and the rudder pedals.
Yeah.
And that's more or less what I have. That's all I have. I don't have, dual monitors. I don't have, these crazy 737 cockpits that people build in their basements or anything like that. I also know guys that, one of our pilots, he's at, college right now. All he has is a laptop and a little joystick. And that's how he does the routes.
Right.
So you don't need much for this. Basically need the simulator. And you need a joystick. That's about it.
But you have to, and how do you log that you did it? I mean, so somewhere there's a controlling program that said you made that flight.
Right. And so that's where the system that I was talking about before comes mm-hmm. in. You download the software. It's all free. You don't pay for any of that stuff. And, other than if you had to buy the simulator to begin with. But, the fleet that we specifically chose because for Flight Simulator X, they're almost all default aircraft. Of the others that are in our fleet, you can get free add-ons from other developers that said, you know, hey, wonder what it'd be like to fly a Saab 340 in simulation. So all of our aircraft are available for free. Now you can go out and you can pay for nicer versions.
Right.
But there's no additional cost beyond the simulator and the joystick and the computer.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that'd be fun. I think that would be a pretty slick thing to do. And I might just have to hop in the 767.
Well,
and then send me the Cliff Notes version of it when you get done.
I'll tell you what. I've been doing the 767 routes. I'm more of Mark's persuasion, where I kind of want to do the takeoff and the landing and skip the 3 or 4 hours in between. So, Al, if you're willing to sign up for that 767, I'm more than happy to hand it over to you.
That's right. Well, I want to do the 767, but just from O'Hare to Janesville.
If you could get a 767 to land in Janesville, I would. I'll buy you lunch at the grill room.
Actually, going back to... many years ago, I did try to fly, you know, even into O'Hare stuff. Landing the big iron on older Microsoft Flight Simulators, maybe even the current one, was not like landing a Cessna. I was always long, high, you ran out of runway. I don't know what I was doing wrong, but from a visual perspective, not from an instrument perspective, I always found it hard to land those big airliners.
Well, and it's interesting that you bring that up, because we actually have that same problem. We have pilots that come in, and it's usually the younger crowd, but it's also anybody that's just not used to the way a flight simulator is different from a real-world airplane. So what we do is we actually put our pilots through training.
We won't certify them for an aircraft.
Oh, my goodness. That's cool.
To fly it until we know that they're going to operate it to our standards. Because, again, and I don't know if I mentioned this before, but part of our costs are maintenance costs.
Oh, no. Everything's there. This is just nuts to me.
So, you know, we have 100-hour inspections. Complete overhauls. We have the equivalent of annuals. But then on top of that, we also have unscheduled maintenance, let's call it that, where the pilot forgot to raise the flaps above VFE. Or pilot extended their gear a little bit too early. And
or landed on his nose wheel while flying a 737 for Southwest.
Too soon.
Yep, we've had that too, unfortunately. So those are major costs. So just like real-world airlines, we want to make sure that you're going to operate safely and you're not going to – by operating safely, you're going to save the company money by us not having to pay for planes that you break.
Yeah. Are there pilot unions on these?
No, they're not, thankfully. However, we did bring in one aspect of pilot unions. I'm not sure if it's so much unions as just the way business is done. We actually do route bidding for our airline.
That's cool.
Yeah, so
that's
we'll...
That's just weird.
You know, so we'll have, by rank and seniority, about midway through the month, the pilots will submit their route bids. And then we'll look at it and say, okay, well... Jake, the COO, wants to fly that 737 from O'Hare to Atlanta next month. He's going to get that route over new guy Al that says he wants to...
NGA.
Right. That says, yeah, I'd like to fly that 737 to O'Hare to Atlanta. But maybe we'll put him in the 767 because we're cool. You know, he likes doing those things too.
Right, yeah. My seniority can hold it. Wow, as a new hire...
Seniority.
Airline joke.
Yeah, I get it. Now you're going to be talking about bids.
Right. Now I got a bid. You could be like a real crew member and like right before the bidding computer closes, everybody's like, get off, I got a bid. And then they get stuck with reserve because they forgot to bid or the system locked them out.
Yeah, so fortunately, I guess for guys like Al, what we do is when they come on to the virtual airline, we'll take real-world experience at 100% of their flight hours. So if Al's got... Al's got his thousands upon thousands of hours, he'll be...
Unfair! Look at that.
He'll bump right up the list.
All right.
That's cool.
We'll also take prior virtual airline experience because the theory is there that you've got a little bit of knowledge flying for a virtual airline, so we want to honor that, but we'll only honor it at half the time because we can't say what kind of pilot you were for them. We just know that you flew.
But someone could go to a different virtual airline who accepts all their hours.
Right. So that, you know, that's kind of the...
Can they fly for multiple? Certainly they could fly
for
multiple.
That's like the difference between flying for United and American or
except
whatever.
You can fly for both.
Right. Yeah, I mean, if you want... If you were that big into flight simulation,
think of the virtual billionaire you'd become.
Wow, picking up overtime would be easy.
Yeah. So, it's a lot of fun. At times, it can be a little bit of a headache because you do have issues like software glitches that you don't have in real world. I mean, you have software glitches, but they're of a different kind. This is like the route didn't get uploaded to the database or the the ACAR software that we work with, said you lowered your gear at 300 knots when you didn't. So you have those kind of headaches. And then you also do kind of have the people headaches, you know, sometimes you just get one person in there that's not doing what they're supposed to be doing or they're doing a little bit too much of something
right.
else. And so you have to deal with that too.
Yeah. All right. That's awesome. I could see it. I don't know. It's kind of, makes me want to go out and buy a nice computer and a screen and a yoke and a throttle quadrant. to upgrade the.
Now I know what to get you for the holidays.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome. What are you going to get me?
That would be
I don't know. You know what? We're each going to get each other an airplane. I know you like the virtual. I like the real thing. So I'll get you a virtual airplane. You get me the real thing.
All right.
Sounds fair to me.
Yeah, I think so.
Wow, that's awesome.
You know what I like about this show?
What's that?
With Simple Flight Aviation Radio, when we started this just over a year ago, I thought I knew aviation.
Yeah, we haven't
scratched the surface, but the different every week we extend the borders of what GA has going on and the people in it.
Yeah.
That's, you know, so like, if you told me a year ago we're going to be talking about an industry around an airline that's virtual with CEOs and management structures and things, I would have said, what are you smoking? But it exists.
Yeah.
You know, we've met a lot of people. We've found a lot of the nooks and crannies of aviation.
So I was talking to Jacob Eiting earlier today via text message, and he's got some exciting announcements that are coming up. I don't think I'm going to mention them on air. I'll let that be up to him. But, you know, it was cool because I was like, you know, he was showing me some of the stuff that he's been working on, and I was like, wow, this is cool. And I sent back a message, and I'm like, I'm glad I have friends that build aviation things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm like, whether it's a virtual airline, or it's a little piece of software, or it's a flight planning tool, or something like that, it's cool. And,
it is cool.
It is. It's really awesome. So John, what's next for your virtual airline? Where do you see this thing in 5 years, virtually and size-wise and whatever?
Well, 5 years, I can't honestly say. Hopefully I'm too busy flying real airplanes, doing real aviation things that
you're talking.
This is kind of a fond memory. But I would like to see it. I'd like to see more pilots flying with us. I'd like to see us get a little bit more up there in the rankings. I mean, those are just kind of the personal wants. But what I'd really like to see out of this is the passion for aviation growing through our virtual airline.
Because, now we're talking the same.
Right.
Yeah.
Because, you know, as you know, I've got my other website, Midwest Flight Lines, because I'm not busy enough, you know, between doing this and regular work and then all the other things. I've kind of made it a tagline of the website that I want to get more people more passionate about aviation. And so the virtual airline is kind of a conduit for doing that. If I can get people interested in virtual airlines, well, now that's giving them a sliver of a taste of what it's like to work for an airline. Or if they're already working for an airline, maybe they see something that they don't get to see in their everyday flying experience. So it kind of, not just to ignite the passion, but to find that spark again. Because some people do, they get years into their flying experience, and then they kind of lose that spark. They kind of lose their way. And so if I can use the virtual airline to help them get back on the right track with their passion and why they got into it, I consider that a win.
Yeah.
I would say that I fall into that boat a little bit. You know, that's there's, you know, flying, you know, I'll say it again, you know, choosing the destination in an airplane. You know, I really miss that. And, you kind of get jaded by just like, oh, okay, I'm just going to go, you know, is this really what flying is? It's like, no, it's whatever you want it to be. So, yeah, that's awesome.
I agree.
Yeah.
Woo!
Absolutely. Well, cool. Well, you know, John, you know, this is a pretty cool endeavor. You know, you're a virtual airline among many, but, you know, I think it's kind of cool to hear the little, you know, virtual business practices you've got, how you grow, you know, and ultimately what this is going to do for aviation. you know, and the show definitely features amazing people doing amazing things in aviation. You're certainly one of them. So thank you very much.
You bet.
Well, I appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, if one last quick plug for Dash Air Virtual. It's www.dashairvirtual.com, right?
That's correct.
Go ahead.
You can also follow us on Twitter. It's at Dash Air Virtual. We'd love for you to come hang out with us. We have what's called a TeamSpeak. Just got to go to TeamSpeak.com, download the software, and then if you tweet us or you go to the website and send me a message or anything like that, we'll tell you how to find us.
That's awesome.
Perfect.
Absolutely. Well, I might check it out when I get home. I don't know. I think so.
767, Mr. Waterloo, Captain Waterloo. I love
it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, but yes, thanks again for telling us about that. But I hope you stick around.
You got a little hanger talk going.
Hanger talk going on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hanger flying.
This is the best of that. Now we can relax.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now we get to talk airplanes, like the real ones.
Let's talk about virtual ones.
All right, let's talk about virtual, like citations running into hangars at Santa Monica.
Yikes! I thought we weren't supposed to highlight crashes.
We're not. I don't want to highlight crashes. And it was sad. It's tragic. There was an accident, you know, blown tire or whatever. But to me, it's putting pressure on another sad part of aviation, and that is potentially the death of an airport.
Yeah.
Right? There's people that live in the area saying this is too dangerous to have around, and it smells like jet fuel around here, and it's too noisy. And I'm always the one that says the airport was there before you moved there. Right? So what's changed? Yeah, maybe they've gotten a little busier.
Right.
More houses, but you move next to an airport. That's like someone saying, I didn't know the coffee would be hot.
Yeah.
Right? So I get frustrated with this, and you know, how could they put pressure to close that airport? And I think there's some legal things that are going to keep it open, at least trying to. But there's people with money and people that live in California maybe have a little bit more money. Maybe they can make that happen. And I hate that. It scares me when people put enough pressure to close one of our precious GA airports.
Absolutely. You know, the sad part is that I don't think those people will understand what they had in that airport until it's gone. They're gonna.
Will they ever? They don't.
Maybe they don't know. Maybe they don't care.
Yeah.
LA.
That's my fear.
You know, Los Angeles area does have plenty of airports. Although, you know, when you have to explain to them that you're now going to have to drive, you know, 30 minutes or however long it takes to get through LA traffic to get to an airport of similar size that can have the similar, operations or a similar experience, then maybe they'll second guess that. I don't know. I'm hoping that that is entering the decision, but it doesn't sound like it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I hope it stays open. It's a beautiful airport. It's pretty iconic.
Never been there.
It's fun. They have one approach. It's a circling approach, and that's it.
Look at you. You know. How many airports have you landed at?
I don't know.
How many states have you landed at airports?
All of them except Delaware. I've never been to Delaware.
So Alaska and Hawaii you've flown?
Oh, excuse me. I've flown, I've never been to Hawaii either.
See, I've got something in my logbook that he doesn't. I did the Maui thing.
Yeah.
And I could have landed. You know what? We went island hopping and I just flew over them to watch the whales. I should have said, and he said, would you like to land at an airport on each island? I go, no. Malachi and Lanai, and I didn't do it. I should have. Oh, well.
But in my virtual logbook.
Yeah,
I've
here we go.
I've got
20,000 airports I've landed at.
I'm going to fly from Dover, Delaware now to Honolulu in that 767.
Okay.
We will set that route up for you.
All right.
Sir. I think you should do it in a 152 with extended tanks.
There you go. I could probably go to work for 2 days and then come back. And
it's still going.
Yeah, so, coast.
Yeah, go to the setup and put unlimited fuel.
That's awesome.
You know, but that would cost a lot in terms of gas, even virtual gas. Did you hear what they're doing at San Marcos with aviation fuel this week?
No, I didn't.
Isn't that where AOPA Summit is this week?
Well,
or near there?
The summit is actually in Fort Worth. And my dad's side of the family is from Texas, so I actually know the area a little bit. But you're looking at about 150 nautical miles out from Dallas-Fort Worth is San Marcos, Texas. And that's where Redbird has its headquarters. Now,
right.
If you're a member of AOPA or anything like that, you've been kind of hearing them talk about, well, that Redbird wants to do this experiment for the month of October. At San Marcos Airport, they are offering $1 avgas for the whole month.
How awesome is that? I would fly every day. Just think about it. If you burn 15 gallons an hour, and you're getting $1 rather than $7 or $6.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
You're saving $100 an hour.
I mean,
at least could make flying cheap.
I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you guys right now. I'd be out flying an airplane at $1 a gallon, avgas.
You know, yeah. at that point, if I was in your shoes, John, and getting my private, I'd pick up and go out there as long as it's reflected in the rates. How many people could we get into a private pilot's license if gas was reduced by, let's say they're flying small airplanes that are burning 10 gallons an hour.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
And they can save $60, $70 an hour on a $90 airplane?
Well, I mean, even the 152 that I'm taking my training in, you know, yeah, it's only 6 gallons an hour.
Okay.
But that's $6 for the hour of gas versus, $36 an hour.
And how much is the hourly rate, wet rate that you're paying now?
It's 118 on the tack time.
118 wow. On tack.
So,
I mean, if you drop, let's say, $30 off of that, I mean, you're, you know, $80, $90.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just think that would drive, but it's unnatural. I think it's cool, but they can't keep it up because they're going to lose money every gallon they sell.
Well, yeah, and they've even come out and said that, you know, this is not something that we can sustain long term. It's just an experiment on their part. They want to see if the price of avgas is really that big of a factor into how much people are flying. And so far it looks like it's a pretty big deal. They said, I think in the first day or so, early reports are coming out that they sold as much gas in one day as they did the whole month prior to that.
Wow.
I would do it if I own my own airplane. I mean, that's the largest, you know, you got your fixed cost, but variable cost is all about fuel.
I wonder how they can track that though, if that's really that big of a deal. I think that's just almost, you know, I like what they're doing, but isn't that like just, is it going to give skewed numbers because they're just becoming a destination to get fuel?
Well,
but it's going to drive maybe other services, restaurants. I don't know what else these people own, but I would think make it a destination. What's wrong with that?
Well, and I mean, if you think about it the other way, if I'm going to go out and fly an airplane, I'm not going to fly out of my way for, maybe I will, but, you know, you hear people flying, you know, to this airport versus that airport because it's 20 cents, you know, 20 or 30 cents difference.
Right.
Think about it if it was $3 difference or $4.
That's what we have here.
Right, exactly.
From this airport to, at least used to be up the road, it was almost $3 difference to go 10 miles up the road here or 20 miles up the road here, difference.
Right. So you'll fly out of the way to,
you bet,
to get the cheaper gas. But think about what you're saying there. You're flying more to get the cheaper gas. So people are flying more because the avgas is cheaper.
Right. And I'm doing it not even for my own airplane. I'm trying to help my owners out if I get that.
Right, exactly.
Right, because I know that their rates that they charge me in our club is based on their operating costs. And if I can reduce that by $30, $40 an hour, I'm not going to see a price increase. Gosh, I might even get a price decrease.
Exactly. So I think if I were to, if someone had come to me and said, well, we're going to do this experiment and we're going to charge $1 a gallon for avgas for a month and see if that affects how much people fly, I would say, I don't need an experiment to tell you that people are going to fly more.
Right.
But, you know what? I think it's also to answer back to some of the critics that are saying that, oh, it doesn't matter how much avgas costs. It's, there are other factors as to why people are, just aren't flying as much as they used to.
Right.
Yeah. And normally, so here, it's the Redbird Skyport.
Yes.
Their fuel shows in for flight as $6.09. So essentially it's, you know, $5 cheaper, not $3 cheaper. It's over $5 cheaper.
Right.
Right now. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I love it.
I love it too. I think it's great. See, I love innovative things. I love people going on the edge. My hat's off to Redbird Skyport.
Mark loves disruption.
Yes. Disrupt. Dive. Hey, what else did I want to talk to you about?
Well,
we're not done with this yet, I guess.
Well, no, actually, I was going to say, as a longtime listener of the show, I did notice
and
that
we appreciate
something was,
that.
Something that was missing from the beginning of the show that we normally do, or that Mark normally does. And, it doesn't it's got its own hashtag.
Oh my God.
I will say that, 25% of the reason I even agreed to do this was so I could see this in person. Up close.
I'm going to get out my camera and I'm going to start filming this. And part of this is I cannot believe one, I forgot it. And then two, Mark, you forgot it.
Well, let's see. Keep talking.
Normally,
this is like, have you ever gone to a restaurant and you're with other people and they say, yeah, I'm ready to order and you aren't. And you have everyone else go order and you figure it out by the time it's you.
Yeah.
So do you have a joke you can tell while I come up with one really quick?
No, this is going to be on the spot right now. We're doing it now. Doing it live.
And unfortunately, I get most of my jokes from you, Mark, so I'm going to have to take a pass.
If I were to tell a joke, yeah. I'd tell the snail joke.
And that would take a while because it's a snail joke.
Yeah.
It's, well, how about, boy, this is catching me on the spot here. How about the retaliation and embarrassment joke?
All right.
So this guy goes to a bar, right? And he's kind of a meek and mild guy, and he sees a really beautiful young lady sitting there, and he's wanting to get the courage to go talk to her. And after about an hour and a drink, he goes over to her, and he says, you know, do you mind if I just sit down and we chat? And she yelled at the top of her lungs, I am not going to sleep with you tonight. And then he's mortified, right? And he slinks back in his chair. And then she says, you know, I'm sorry. I'm actually a psychology researcher, and I like to see, you know, what reactions, you know, people would get from saying something like that. I apologize for catching you off guard like that. So he stands up and yells at his top of his lungs, what do you mean $200?
Oh, that was worth it.
Kind of a spur of the moment type thing.
I love it. That's nice. And we got it on
it on video
too. I'm going to post that to Spark Reel.
Yeah. Great. Yeah, put it on the Aviation Spark Reel.
That'd be great. That's the iconic thing is the Sunday Night Chuckle.
That's right. Without being prepped for it either.
That on the spot, done live right now. That's great.
All right. Well, thank you. And I don't even have my, I just got a tweet on it too. Okay. Yeah, he just said SNC. This was someone who must have tweeted while you were talking.
Yeah.
We'll see. Tweeter, tell me what you thought of it for being spur of the moment.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So somebody sent an email in and they were flying back from Champaign today. They're at 7,000 feet and they got a lot of ice.
A lot of ice? 7,000 feet?
Yeah.
There wasn't a freaking cloud in the sky today.
I don't know. Obviously there was
south.
Yeah.
Wow. What kind of airplane? Whoop.
I'm guessing that it was a Bonanza.
All right. I just wanted to confirm that. Wow. October, and we had that front come through because it's been 80 degrees. Now it was 60, 50 at 7,000 feet times 3 days, 21 degrees. Yep, that would make sense. It's that time of year. We got to worry about that stuff.
I love it.
I know you do.
This is the stuff that I live for.
Yeah.
It provides great lessons for flying.
Yeah, just hopefully not lessons for other people because you're not around anymore because you didn't learn it. I know I've said don't be afraid of ice, respect ice.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm afraid of ice.
Really?
Yeah, because I don't have enough experience to understand the different amounts of accumulation rates. You know, people always say, oh, it's not going to fall out of the sky. But I keep hearing these stories. You get a real juicy cloud, and it's on there. But I don't know what that means in terms of climbing or descending and getting out of it.
You know, like ice is a... You know, a lot. I think that ice. People have this connotation about ice that as soon as you get it, like bad things, like immediately are going to happen. Which, yeah, you know, they do. But like they have, but it's not as, it's not like you're just like going to go from 5,000 feet to zero immediately.
Right.
Right. You have at least 30 seconds to make a decision, to be able to do something. Right. And if you could climb, you could descend, you can turn, you can go left. Ice is a pretty isolated event, really. Yeah. And it's a, you know, usually you could get out of it pretty quickly.
That's what I'm told, right? And I just want to know that that's always true. And one of my personal rules is that I will always be able to have an out low, just in case. So when I fly and I hear there's icing or things, I want to know that I can get out the bottom of the clouds without hitting an obstruction.
Yeah.
And stop that accumulation.
That's one of the things I think that a lot of people, yeah, and I'm kind of switching gears here real quick, but like the difference between a normally aspirated airplane and a turbocharged airplane.
Right.
You know, a lot of people say, oh, you don't need a turbocharger in the Midwest, but
That's what I say.
I would say that in the winter, it would be so great to have a turbo because you can climb quickly through ice. You can get on top of it. If you're in it, you can get out of it. And it's really a great tool to have.
But in the winter, I can climb quickly in any IO 550, quickly being a relative term. And I don't fly at the flight level, so I'm low. I can usually climb, especially in the winter, you know, 1,000, 1,500, 2,000 foot per minute in the 22.
Yeah, if you're at 6,000 feet.
Right. Yeah, that's what I say. At my kind of altitudes.
Yeah. I think that, you know, you could get out of it faster with the turbocharger.
Yeah, I'm sure you could. And you can go higher.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
So you could go higher. You could get out of it. The turbocharger, in my opinion, in the Midwest is a phenomenal tool
it's a good point.
In the winter.
Okay, let's do the one of what if. So.
All right.
I give you a choice. You're going to be flying a GA aircraft.
Yeah.
And you can either have, I don't know if I want to say Fiki. Let's make it a little bit tougher decision. But you could have a turbo, or you could have one with TKS. Maybe not Fiki, so it only provides minimal help, but it provides help. Which would you take?
I'd take the turbo.
Okay. Now, what if it was turbo versus Fiki? So it had the power that whereby the FAA says, you know what?
I would take the Fiki.
Okay. That's kind of what I thought.
Yeah.
John, I don't know. He's John's working toward his private, and we're talking about icing up and all.
Well, it's, I actually know what Fiki systems are. I, you know, keep up with that kind of stuff. I would, if I had the choice between the two, I think I would actually take I would take the Fiki, systems.
Yeah. Got a listener here telling me, turbo.
Yeah, you would take, yeah. I think that the Fiki makes sense in a lot of, in a lot of scenarios, because if you're in a turbocharged non-Fiki airplane, then you know, by the nature of the law, if you pick up any ice, then you're illegal. You don't want that to be hit, you know, to be the case. And the Fiki will get you, you know, at least you have more options with the Fiki, let's put it that way.
Right. You can, unless it's severe ice, you really essentially buys you more time, which I like.
Yeah.
To
yeah.
think things through. Because I'm a slow thinker, after all.
Right.
What do you mean, right? Right. You agreed way too fast.
I did.
So you know what I thought was interesting? I'm going to kind of go off on a little bit of a tangent. I always like the Caravan, even though it's a little slow. It's a carrier. It's turbine. You know, it has wonderful interior. And they had boots. And then they replaced it with TKS, which surprised me because I've always felt that boots, right or wrong, at least, I don't know if I'm right or wrong, were a more effective de-ice, not anti-ice, but de-ice technology, yet they went away from that. What do you think? Because you've flown both.
I love the TKS system.
Over the boots, like on your King Air?
Yeah. Oh, my God. Hands down.
Why? Because it seems like the boots immediately breaks that off. The TKS.
But it doesn't do it as clean. It, you know, I've never really, is for boots, you know, for in the King Air, I've never, you know, every time I pop the boots and, you know, you get a lot of ice and you're just like, okay, it's time to pop the boots.
Yeah.
I've never been 100% satisfied with how, you know, the ice is broken off.
Interesting.
There's a lot of decision making that goes on to that where, you know, this is the first plane that I've flown with boots and I'm just like, okay, should I pop it now? No, yes, no, yeah, you know, and you really have to develop this knowledge of when it works.
Yeah,
and then,
they haven't, isn't it a myth that you can pretty much pop it anytime? There is no too early like they used to say.
I would totally disagree with
All right, fair enough.
The you know, ice can stick, you know, the ice will stick in a way that, you know, not in a great way. You have to actually let the ice build up pretty significantly, pop it to get any type of clean break, and it's not even, you know, as clean as you would like.
Interesting.
With the Fiki system, or the TKS system, excuse me, you know, it's a slow system, but it works great because you get a completely clean leading edge and
as long as all
wing.
No one put wax on the leading edge of your airplane and prevented it to come out. Now you and I know someone that bought a new Corvallis TT and replaced the de-ice or anti-ice with heated wing leading edges.
Yeah,
and he loves it. You know, it's a tape or something. But I asked him, well, if it melts it and then it starts to flow toward the back of the wing, doesn't it refreeze by the time? He says, no, it works really well, that it gets off the wing totally. And it's his favorite system. His is not Fiki either.
Yeah.
So have you had any experience with the heated wings or heating leading edges?
Just on the jets, but.
Yeah.
I mean, those work, you know, obviously are really nice, but. Like on a heated leading edge, let me rephrase it, on propellers, I've noticed that as soon as you get, it's almost an immediate effect, and because what happens is that, like, you just hurt, you're melting that very small layer, the attachment layer, if you will, between, you know, the surface and the ice. And it doesn't take much for that to melt. So as soon as you turn the supply power to that area, it's almost like an immediate break. Because, you know, you just have to get, you know, melt that very small, like, boundary layer of ice. It's not like the whole thing just melts off. You know, it breaks and then lets go.
Well, and that's, not to get too chemistry major or anything like that. Not that I was a chemistry major, but it's thermodynamics.
I didn't think I was going to hear the word thermodynamics tonight.
Yeah. Well,
next he's going to say plethora. no.
Well,
go ahead.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Yeah. To Al's point about the heated leading edge system, what happens there is that the more it's going to sound kind of like a obvious statement, but the more ice you have, or the thicker the ice is, the harder it is actually for that heated leading edge to melt everything. Because one of the properties of ice or frozen water is that it has a very high specific heat capacity. So it can absorb a heck of a lot of heat and never do anything.
Right.
So So the less water in the form of ice that you have, the less heat it can absorb, and thus it'll break earlier.
Yeah.
Wow. So, yeah. I don't know that I'll remember that, but.
So basically, and that's what the TKS system actually works on, is that it's not actually melting the ice because it's raising the temperature of the wing. What it's doing is it's adding a fluid. It changes that heat capacity and therefore lowers it so that it'll actually melt at a lower temperature.
Yeah,
okay.
That makes a lot of sense because it melts at a lower temperature, and then it essentially creates on the heated wings or even the fluids, and then the fluids.
Wait a minute. I'm still thinking of it. I would think you want things to melt at a higher temperature.
Well, if it melts at a higher temperature, it means that the temperature has to be higher.
Oh no, you're right. Yeah. Okay, it's like putting salt down on the driveway.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I got you. Okay. Yeah. Never mind. I dig that. It's late Sunday night. I didn't sleep well this weekend.
Yeah. Well, I think you have once you understand what's actually going on, that, you know, melting the wings or anything, or melting the ice.
Yeah, we don't want to melt wings.
Yeah.
Good news is we have no ice. The bad news is we have no wings.
Right. Yeah, exactly. But, you know, if you start thinking about really what you're trying to do with the boots is you have to crack through, you know, pretty much the entire layer of ice. So you have to let the ice build, and even still, so you're not really like, you know, if you look at the, how boots are made, they've got like little strips, right? You know, the balloons
mm-hmm.
that go.
Right.
And all you're doing is trying to change the size at which of the piece they've,
right.
you know, adhered to, which is the leading edge of the wing. So you inflate the boot and you're going to create cracks. So a good chunk of the ice will fall off, but the things that the chunks of ice that were still like hanging on to the, you know, part of the balloon that, you know, has the least amount of like shape deformation or something like that. It's like sticking your tongue to like a cold pole. You know, it still sticks, you know? Yeah. So you're not changing the temperature of anything. You're just changing the size of something. Or as opposed to, you know, the electric wing or the heated wing or whatever else. It's a, it has a, you know, you can fully separate the ice from the airframe.
Yeah, it's interesting, and I don't fly playing with boots, so it's more of a discussion point, but, I'm glad I have TKS.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I think a lot of people think that where the debate comes in is, you know, TK with boots, you always have them. You know, TKS is an expendable, you know, system.
I saw, I think it was on YouTube, someone, have you ever seen those garden sprayers? They're a few gallon thing and then you pump it and it, and they give themselves a de-ice before they start up, spraying TKS over the entire airplane, like it was that pink de-ice fluid you get at the airlines.
Really?
Yeah, it was you just go in around, pump, 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 spray it. It's a thin mist. And that's what they do to make sure there's no frost or anything else. It was a flight school that was doing that.
Nice.
Does that work? I guess it would.
Yeah, absolutely. De-ice fluid.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, you're pointing at the clock.
I am, because I'm wondering, we got some things. Do we have a guest next week?
Yes, we do. We have Jeff from Social Flight.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, he's going to be on the show next week as our guest. He's going to be returning Sunday from Fort Worth from
Summit.
From the AOPA Summit. And then we are, after that, we're going to have, I think he won the Oshbash Award. Do you know who that is for the best aviation entrepreneur? 2013.
I know who finished second.
Yeah.
Open Airplane, right?
Right.
So
is it the guy that does Heading 370?
No.
Claus?
It is Paul from Classic Flight Bags.
Oh.
He's going to be on the show on the 20th. He's a Midwest hero, if you will. And
kind of like you.
I don't know about that. It's a Midwest Flight Lines.
Yeah. That's right. There we go.
Exactly. So we've got a good, nice little lineup.
Excellent.
Coming up here. And like we said, last month, or last week, a lot of people have accepted rain checks for the show because there's a lot of cool software updates coming out and they don't want to join or be on the show, before the release of their updated software. So.
Yeah.
We got a handful of,
by the way,
cool
I got some feedback.
What's
people
that?
Were saying they needed their Monday fix and we got to do a better job of getting it posted. And it took us like 4 days this last week. And I know you were in a hotel with slow internet.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That's, I go as fast as I can.
Well, maybe you train me.
I don't know if I like that.
Look at those cheeks glow. You got these big shiny cheeks now.
Yeah.
I'd love to
but
be.
No, I know. I do. Some weeks I'm better at posting the shows than others, but, you know, that's a lot of times you're limited by downloading multiple gigabyte files in hotel internet. And let's just say that it's not very friendly to, large
I'm sure
files.
Not. Well, I'm doing a little Part 121 flying this week as a passenger. I'm heading out to LAS.
Yeah, Las Vegas.
Thank you. And anything you need from me will be delayed till the end of the week.
All right. Okay.
I'm going to LAS for a QBR.
All right.
Which is a quarterly business
review.
Sounds
like an Arby's beef sandwich.
We went over that, why they name it Arby, right?
I have no clue.
You don't know one? Think about it. A-R-B-Y, right? Arby's?
Yeah.
Say it, though.
Arby's.
Without the S.
Arby.
What does it sound like?
Roast beef?
Bingo. R-B. That's all it is R-B. Roast
wow.
beef.
Wow.
You know, after all these years, it's nice that you can enlighten people about the source of things. He still didn't know Palwaukee was because it was at the corner of Palatine Road and Milwaukee Road.
Yeah, it was a brand new Palwaukee native.
Yeah.
So,
and then they went and changed the name on you. So.
They're going to change the roads from Palatine and Milwaukee to Chicago and Executive, I guess.
Well, you know, that makes sense.
Yeah. Or not.
Yeah, right. Well, anyway, this was a fun show. I really enjoyed this.
It was relaxing. We kind of got set. We lounged.
Yeah.
A little. Just it was more like a 2-hour hangar talk, and we got to talk about virtual airlines for an hour in the middle.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, John, thanks for being with us tonight.
John Kessinger at Midwest Flight Lines Twitter handle and dash. What is it? Dash. Oh my God.
Go ahead, John.
It's dash air virtual, and actually the Twitter is. My personal one is at MW Flight Lines because Midwest was too long. But
yeah, no, okay. Yeah. So I'm glad you did that. But, as I was saying, I go, that just doesn't sound right.
Right.
So,
but it was a blast coming here and talking that stuff and just hanging out in general.
Yeah. So that's why we look forward to Sunday nights.
Absolutely. Well, I hope you have a good time in Las Vegas, Mark.
I will. Thank you. I hope you have a great week. And of course, you're going to be doing a lot of flying this weekend?
Yep, a lot of flight instruction.
Good. Well, I hope wherever you go, you get a lot of tailwinds.
Thanks, and I hope you have blue skies.
Good night, everybody. Thanks for joining us.
Good night.
You're listening to Simple Flight Aviation Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Heppner on www.simpleflight.net.
Simple Flight Radio, ready for takeoff.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult?
Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Eppner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.